kwakuwamfunyako nawuku nawundukufu atamelele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and thank you once again for tuning in to Radio Harambe, brought to you by JamboEveryone.com. I am Dave McBride, broadcasting from the Radio Harambe studios at an altitude of a full 1,998 feet above the savannah, and joining me from somewhere in the world, a man who once survived 10 weeks stranded in the salt flats of the Makati Kaji, surviving only on sugarcane mojitos and African spice cake. It's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you?
Jumbo Dave, how are you? I'm in New South Wales. You know where that is?
It's, here we are, New South Australia.
Very good. We're studying haleyfowl, which is the largest of the megapods. Do you know what a megapod is?
Wait a minute. The largest of the megapods.
Right.
Nah, I'm out. A whale?
Not even close. It's a mound. It's another word for a mound builder. It's a type of bird that builds its nest on the ground, and it is the largest of them.
Not even it's a swimming bird, for God's sake.
I mean, the name of the bird is Maleyfowl. I should have given it away for
you. Yeah, you flew right past me on that one.
That's okay. That's okay. It is vulnerable. It is not quite yet endangered, but it is vulnerable thanks a lot to things such as foxes that have been introduced into Australia. And, of course, the bird is not really geared for it, building its nest on the ground. That causes all sorts of problems, but we know we're here studying it right now.
And that's a beautiful area of the world. It really is.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. A lot better than where I usually am.
Did you bring your personal supply of sugarcane mojitos and African spice cake? You have to be impressed. You have to be impressed that I purposely and professionally pronounced Makati Kaji. Not an easy word.
I have a new appreciation for painted lemurs as well. They're quite good.
On this show, we are going to discuss the news from the Animal Kingdom and Walt Disney World. And in our feature segment, we are going to give our insider tips on how to tour Disney's Animal Kingdom in the rain. Let's begin with the local news. And since we talk a lot about how much we love the Animal Kingdom at night, we always like to let folks know when park hours are extended. And right now, we seem to be in the middle of a large opportunity for people to see the park after the sun goes down. Over the next few weeks, the Animal Kingdom will be, you know, consistently open at 8 p.m. and beyond. Only occasional 7 p.m. closing on kind of, you know, the days you would imagine. And in fact, Disney's not even cutting back the hours until the very end of April. So we got a good like six-week window or so here where we are going to have those, you know, at least an hour's worth of nighttime, but now that the clocks jump forward, that's going to be kind of sunset, which is, you know, sunset up Expedition Everest, Mike, sometimes is a heck of a ride.
Yes, it is. I mean, I like it at night, but it is interesting to see them keeping the park open so late on a relatively, I mean, now we're starting to get to spring break and the crowds have built up.
Yeah.
But they've been doing this for about three or so weeks now in late February, touring plans, you know, puts the days at like ones and twos and threes. I mean, there's some days when the Hollywood Studios is closing at 7.
Right.
And the Animal Kingdom was staying open till 8, which I've never seen before. I don't know if this is sort of testing the waters for, you know, later in the year, if they hope to bust out the Rivers of Light sooner than we had initially thought or what, just to see what traffic flow is like at night. I'm not sure. But it's a little strange.
It does,
but it's an opportunity.
It does feel like preparing the guests for the new normal. You know,
I think so.
And we always like to point that out, and I always do that on our news as well. So if you're down there, take advantage of it. Certainly take advantage, even the dusk hours when the lights start to go down and the lighting along the pathways come up and the lights come up on the Tree of Life. And that's really, you know, the wow moment for people who've never seen the animal kingdom in the dark. So,
right. I mean, what you can always do is have like a late dinner at Yak and Yeti. You could probably walk in on it at 6:45 at night and, you know, eat, and then you're there well after, you know, the crowds are closing up or should be gone. Just take a slow walk, you know, maybe the Harambe way around.
One of my favorite things to do. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's even though the park closes at 8, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to get out of there at 8. You could, you know, probably milk it to like 8:30 or so.
Sure.
I did a post only a week or so ago on our website about these hours, and I put a few pictures up there. Some of them, one of them of Chester and Hester's, you know, at sundown, kind of before it really got dark, and same thing with Shirkazong in the Asia area. Both are beautiful. They start to light up a little bit.
It is definitely. I love Shirkazong at night. I love the lights they put out.
It kind of reminds you of the Tangled lights over in the Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, really, kind of cool. Really, really cool. So, speaking of Asia and Africa, we are starting to get some reports of work continuing behind the walls and the pathways all around the Animal Kingdom, really, and certainly in between those two areas. Mike, you saw this on Twitter. In fact, you sent it to me. I'm not sure what to make of it, but there's big mounds of dirt going on back there.
Yeah, I don't know what it means. You know, like we've said in previous podcasts, I've heard a couple different things. One is that they're building another path that will take you from Africa to Asia. Why they would do that, I'm not exactly sure, unless they're planning on doing something with the current path to make it better for Rivers of Light. I'm not sure. The other thing I've heard is they're adding another eatery right there. I guess only time will tell. It's not said what it's going to be yet.
I do think that if the Rivers of Light is gonna be active during what one would consider to be an open time, like let's say the park closes at 10, but the Rivers of Light goes at 9, correct? It would, the paths that exist there at that time would be grossly inadequate to move people from Expedition Everest to somewhere else in the park along that area. So the idea of simply building a new thoroughfare for people to use during that time certainly does make some sense.
It makes some sense, and that's also what apparently they're going to do from Avatar Land up until the new Harambe, sort of.
Right.
But almost, I mean, if you buy the theory that this is a new path, it sounds almost as if they're designing another circle around, you know, the Tree of Life area, although this one on the, you know, not on Discovery Island, this one across from the water, so that you can navigate the area without being, you know, actually seeing the Rivers of Light. But if you assume that that's the case, what you're saying is you're assuming that the Animal Kingdom will be open, you know, well past, or at least past the, you know, Rivers of Light. I don't know if the Rivers of Light is going to be, you know, the night capping event a la Illuminations.
Right.
Or is it going to be something like, I don't know, I mean, like the Main Street Electrical Parade or something like that goes, you know, before the park really closes. It's hard to tell right now.
It could go either way. You know, something like that could be either one. So,
and, you know, you also have to remember Illuminations even goes before, certainly during the really heavy, crowded times of the year. Do they do two showings of the Illuminations ever?
I think if they do, they only do it right around like New Year's.
Yeah. I mean, I know sometimes they'll do two showings of Fantasmic during the real busy times.
Right. But that's because there's a finite number of guests that can see that.
True. That's true. That is true. But I mean, presuming, you know, assuming that it's the park's going to be open much later during, you know, New Year's Eve, like open till 11 o'clock at night. So maybe they do want to gear up for that possibility.
Absolutely. So we'll keep you posted on any kind of further information we get on that. And, you know, we're getting into crunch time here. We're expecting some of this stuff to be open, you know, in a matter of really only weeks. I mean, we're only talking, you know, 10, 12 weeks away.
On the Festival of the Lion King side, I'm not so sure about, you know, the other side where this path is.
Yeah, but that's the big one to kind of open. And then we'll start to, I think, from once we see that, we'll start to get an idea of what's really going on here.
Right.
You know, and information will start to come out. Speaking of information starting to come out, we have a little bit more sort of rumor stirring the pot up on Avatar. A couple of weeks ago, a theme park rumor website called Screamscape.com Com reported the possibility of linking the Avatar boat ride. Now, just through quick explanation here, what we seem to know about, what we do know is that the Avatar land is going to have multiple attractions. One of them is going to be a boat ride, and we're finally hearing now that that may be something along the lines of the Pirates of the Caribbean, an indoor, dark boat ride of that kind of capacity and that kind of movement, maybe even with a couple of little drops in the, you know, a couple of rapid drops in the waterway and things to that effect. Mike, there's not a lot of information in this rumor, and people have been saying this for quite a bit, but the thing that sticks out to me is that the word we were hearing about this at the beginning was that it was going to be something, to use the old Disney parlance, a C ticket or a D ticket. And that's certainly not Pirates of the Caribbean.
That is true. Pirates of the Caribbean is not a C or a D ticket. But I mean, is that really a function of its the ride itself or just the popularity of it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what you're saying is, if it were built now, would it be considered an e-ticket?
Well, if it wasn't Pirates, let's say it was a different theme. Let's say it was, I don't know, pick a theme. I don't even, you know, let's say it was the Aristocats. I don't know what made me think of that, but whatever.
Okay.
And, you know, just wasn't as popular as, you know, some other thing, you know, some of the other.
Right.
I mean, to me, an e-ticket is a major technological, you know, thrill kind of ride almost. Tower of Terror is an e-ticket. Is Haunted Mansion an e-ticket? It is certainly from its popularity with the people, but is it an e-ticket in terms of its design and its, you know, it's, you know, pushing the edge kind of? I don't know. It depends on your definition of e-ticket, really.
Well, I think not to mince words on this, but I think the definition of e-ticket is the popular ride, the most popular level of ride. And if it's, you know, and if it's not one of the most popular, regardless of what it is, whether it be a roller coaster or a movie, if it's the most popular, it's an e-ticket. I mean, that's what the ticket, that's what the tickets were based on.
Like the classic, to me, the classic argument is Peter Pan's flight, an e-ticket attraction.
Yes.
It certainly is with the crowds.
Right.
But it certainly is not in terms of, you know, a technological advancement and, you know, length of the ride and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it really depends on your definition.
I guess what I think is that if this is true and we are going to have a boat ride of that scope, and including animatronics and inside and bioluminescent things, that we may really be getting two e-tickets here, two very different types.
Maybe, but I think we always knew that they were going to do the bioluminescent stuff.
Yeah.
And that was going to be a real... I think they are really not hitching their wagon to it so much, but they're focusing very, very much on the technological advancements of the stuff and Avatar Land, and the prime example of that, I think, is the bioluminescent stuff.
Right.
And clearly, the boat ride is going to be the one to showcase that, as well as maybe some of the, you know, just the overall area and stuff like that. I don't think the soaring type ride is really going to feature that so much. So, you know, I guess it is an e-ticket, sir. You know, it could certainly be.
Or pretty close. And it seems like it's a good balance. I mean, to have, you know, a real technologically advanced, you know, thrill ride, and to bring in something else too. I mean, this was what makes it a land, and you know, and I you know, it sounds good to me. If they can have a boat ride that long that has that kind of investment into it, like Pirates of the Caribbean, or even to be mentioned in the same breath of Pirates of the Caribbean, then that means we really are constructing quite a project here.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it's that elaborate. I hope it's that long. Yeah. I hope it's that many, you know, figures in it, that has that much. Right. Technological. I mean, I don't anticipate there being as many animatronic figures as there is in Pirates. I mean, there's a whole,
sure,
you know, there's a, no, not, no pun intended, boatload of them in there. I imagine there'll be less animatronic figures.
Sure.
Maybe more along the line. I'm thinking more along the lines of the current dinosaur attraction, you know.
Right.
Here, a figure there, but more technological stuff, more lighting, more of that kind of stuff. And I hope a couple of little dips too would be nice.
Yeah, it's an intriguing sound. Hopefully it'll be better. I mean, I think a lot of us feared when we first heard Boat Ride that we were going to get the Discovery River boat ride.
Caballeros, just like
you know. So this right. So this at least makes us think that the rumors are moving in the direction of it is a big investment in this, and this isn't just an afterthought to eat up crowds, which I think a lot of folks were concerned about. I'll move on to the next one, which is a. Conservation story, and a really cool one. According to a recently published report, researchers from Oxford University, the conservation group Save the Elephants, and Disney's Animal Kingdom have determined that, in fact, elephants may have developed a vocalization, an alarm, to warn other elephants of the approach of humans. So thinking of something to the effect of if we're all in a camp somewhere in the woods and a bear comes in, everybody yells bear and goes running. That is what they kind of equate this to, which is that they're starting to do some recordings of vocalizations. I think this was done in Kenya specifically with wild elephants and certain behavioral patterns. And it looks like, you know, I think we've all known that elephants are social creatures, but now they may know who the people to run from are.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It's very interesting. The vocalizations of elephants, I mean, we're learning more and more how intelligent these guys really are. You know, I think they're, you know, one of the most intelligent animals on Earth. And their vocalizations are fascinating. I mean, if you go to, I know in the Bronx Zoo they learned, and they were one of the leaders in this, they had two groups of elephants, one and two separate areas of the park, one on the monorail ride, and one in the Elephant Center, which is literally on the other side of the park, a 250-acre park. But they found out that the elephants were actually communicating with each other by vocalizations that humans couldn't hear because it was so low.
Wow.
And, you know, they kept in touch. They were talking during the day. It's amazing what we're finding about elephants. They're fascinating creatures.
Really cool. Well, you can seriously, if you go and just Google elephants, Disney's Animal Kingdom and Oxford University, you'll find this story. It was all over the place and all the kind of conservation things. There's a lot more to read about it, kind of some more of the details is what they did. But it's neat. It's also neat, Mike, to see the Animal Kingdom connected to this kind of research.
Yeah, so absolutely.
And finally, as you may or may not know, and if you don't know, you honestly haven't been paying attention and you need to subscribe to this podcast and join Mike on Twitter and see our website at johnboyeveryone.com. Be that as it may, if you don't know, we have been running a series of contests giving away copies of the brand new CD by the band Wasalu, known in the Animal Kingdom as Buridika. This is the band that plays in the middle of Harambe. We've given away two discs already. Congratulations to those winners. And we are currently running yet another one. And it's over at Safari Mike's Twitter page, which you can find it at Jombo Everyone on Twitter. And Mike has a question there for you. You're going to have to go to him, follow him, and then go through the process of sifting through his one gajillion tweets to find to find the question. He has promised that he will retweet every day. Correct, Mike?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Maybe a couple times a day.
Okay, so you will be able to find it eventually. But go over there. If you are not a follower of his, you should go over there and follow him so that you can get involved in this. Here's the plan of what we've been doing. The discs, which are fantastic. I have 8 of them. We've given 2 away. We're now on to our third, which means I have 5 more yet to go. And throughout all of our platforms, our blog, this show, our both of our Twitter pages, and even our Facebook page, they're all going to be taking part in this contest. The first one was, I believe, on here. No, the first one was on the, was it here? Or then one on the blog. And now we're doing one here on Mike's Twitter page. So make sure you follow everything in order to know when this, when the next CD can be won. We've had some great responses to these. The questions are all really good. I'm not going to say what it is now. You got to go to Mike's Twitter page, at Jombo Everyone, to find that. Just a couple of quick notes, and I want to just kind of reiterate a few things here that really, if you are not in the continental U.S. And you're not willing to chip in for your shipping, then I really can't include you. So make sure that if you do answer and you are from outside of the continental U.S., you make a note in there that you are prepared to pay for your shipping via PayPal. And we've had other things before, like anyone who has written for us or has appeared in the show. If you've won one of these before, all those people are not eligible. And also, we're not responsible for the replacement of any discs should the U.S. Postal Service run it over a little bit. So Mike, we won't tell them what it is.
What do you mean? The question?
The question. But I believe it is a Africa-related question.
So far, they've all been, I think.
Yes, they have, which is apropos.
Maybe I'll keep it that way. I got a lot in the tank for it. So
I think we probably should.
Okay.
And I just want to say one last note, and I don't want to get into this too much, but for those of you who follow Mike's Twitter page, you'll know that Mike and I are brothers, and our family has gone through a very difficult time over the last couple of weeks. I can't express to you how difficult it's been. It's really difficult for me to even talk about. But and through all that, a lot of people, listeners, Twitter followers, readers of the website have shown an incredible amount of sympathy and support for us. And I just want to thank you all. If you want to help or learn even more about the situation without getting into it here, please go to Mike's Twitter page, and he has some information on there. And you can actually help us out a little bit there. I think that is it for the local news.
If anybody wants further information on that, they could just feel free to DM me, and I will talk to them.
Absolutely. If you want, you can do that for me, too. I'm at Radio Harambe. You certainly can contact me. But Mike has all the information on there already. We will go to a break now. When we come back, Mike's got a barrage of world news stories to get through. Coming back in just a second on Radio Harambe.
I'm Explorer Mickey, and like most kids, I love zebras. And some of the coolest are the Grevy Zebra. But if things don't change soon, there won't be any left in the wild. The Grevy Zebra Trust is doing everything they can to help keep them from extinction. But there are only a couple of thousand left, so we have to work fast. Go to their website, GrevyZebraTrust.org, and donate anything you can. Even a small donation will help keep the Grevy Zebra alive for us kids and the future generations to enjoy.
Back on Radio Harambe, Dave McBride joined by Safari Mike, who is in Australia. We know they have good internet connection in Australia, Mike. This is not like some of the other places you've been. It's been unbelievable that we've been able to talk to you. But not New South Wales. They have plenty of internet connection there.
No.
Lots
nice,
of beaches, sure. Lovely pubs, I hear.
Yes, go to a steakhouse later, have some lamb.
There you go.
Nice. Nice.
And we're now going into our world news segment, and as always, that brings us to Mike Safari Mike's realm of the world here. What do you got, Mike?
Well, there's going to be a lot of Magic Kingdom this time around.
Well, good.
A lot going on there, and very little going on anywhere else, really.
Yeah.
Yesterday, or as we're recording this, March 9th, yesterday here, is that Festival of Fantasy premiered to somewhat good reviews. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, Dave.
I watched it live.
I liked it. I thought the floats were very good. New, different. The music was kind of lacking, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I had not really liked the music. And also, I heard complaints from people who were there that the floats are, I mean, everything's very high. You get like a stiff neck. I'm assuming that's so that people can see it from farther away, and you know, they're anticipating more and more people seeing it.
I'm sure.
But those were the two complaints that I heard. But otherwise, fairly well received, I believe.
Yeah, I would think so, and I would agree. I mean, it's a parade, so I'm not expecting for myself to be wowed because it's a parade. Mm-hmm. It's just not something that generally wows me. But I like the creativity behind the aesthetics on the floats. I thought it was certainly new looking for me. I mean, it is a parade unique in the Disney pantheon in my mind. A lot of times we get kind of things that all sort of look the same. This one didn't. So I would agree. I was not aware of the height issue. I couldn't tell that on the videos that I saw. But other than that, yeah, I think it looks beautiful. I think it looks great. The music, I would agree at. But, you know, it wasn't until you mentioned that that I said to myself, yeah, he's right. Nothing in the music made me, didn't stick in my head. But then again, I'm not there. So it's, you know, it's a different experience when it's right in front of you.
Right, right. Yeah, it's no spectral magic when it comes to music or illuminations or something like that.
That could be true, yeah.
I like some of the floats, though. I like the Tangled one. I like the Maleficent Dragon that actually breathed fire. That was cool.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah, I liked it. I liked it. I thought it was good.
Cool.
Can I move on?
Absolutely.
In this day and age of the monorail going farther and farther into the distant past.
You're depressing me already.
Yes, as they're using the monorail less and less, they've actually built a second ferry boat dock so that they get people from the horrible ticket and transportation center closer, to the theme park. But they're building a second ferry dock so that they can have two at the same time unloading and loading so that, they'll increase the capacity of getting people to the park, especially if they continue to have problems with the monorail. Because as you well know, if the monorail shuts down, that creates quite a backlog at the ferry.
Mike, if they remove monorail service in Disney World. Right.
Yes.
I don't think we will have ever seen a Twitter explosion like we would get in that ever in the history of, this would make Mr. Toad and Horizons look like, push the garbage can. Nobody. First of all, I agree that there is cause for us to have alarm. There's cause for alarm here. If they're building this, yes, I would. I do not think that anyone who says that this could be the first cannon fired in the war against the monorail being waged by the bean counters at Disney. We all know the expensiveness of the monorail. We all know the inefficiency of the monorail. Compared to other forms of transportation that they have available to them. We all know these things. But I don't know how they charge $500 a night at the Polynesian without it.
Well, there's a couple of things we could talk about here. Number one is this the first, as you said, cannon fire, the first salvo shot in the... Not the elimination of the monorail, but in the Disney finally saying, all right, we're shutting the monorail down for 6 months and we're really just going to retool it.
That's the best case scenario. Yeah.
Best case scenario. I agree with you. I don't think they're ever going to get rid of the monorail, but is the monorail now going to be just the resort loop? Will they get rid of the one that goes to and from TTC to the... Yep. Will they get rid of the one that goes to and from Epcot from the TTC?
Ooh.
And just do the resort loop. That would save them a lot of money.
You know what, Mike? If they ever did that, they would never tear that track down because of the cost it would take to demo that. So
right.
That thing will be sitting there like a dead elephant for decades to come.
Yeah, so, well, Wonders of Life sits there like a dead elephant.
I understand, but it would be another...
Odyssey Restaurant is a huge, dead elephant in the middle of the park.
Right, Mike, but nobody has t-shirts for the Wonders of Life.
Well, they did at one point.
it's really fascinating to see what's going to happen here, because I think we all know, we've all been hearing for a long time that the monorail is in desperate need of updating. They haven't done an update on that monorail in a long time. And unlike the Disneyland monorail, where it's kind of a limited space, and there's not much there, this is a big transportation system. It really is. There's a lot of trains. There's a lot of track. They're really way high up there.
Yep.
There's a lot of concrete involved. And they've been having problems with them for quite a while now. These shutdowns and these issues have been going on for a number of years. It's only a matter of time before, as Mike is saying, the best case scenario is we shut it down for 6 months, 6 month period or a year and say we're going to retool the whole thing, introduce new trains, do the whole thing. I just don't know if I see that happening.
Yeah, me neither.
I haven't seen a maintenance project of that size at Disney in a long, long time.
I'm concerned that 5 years from now, it's just going to be the resort loop and that's it.
Yeah.
Just to deal with the people who spend the $500 a night at the Grand Floridian or whatever. It'll almost become an attraction as opposed to a means of transportation.
Here's what I'll guarantee you. Whatever is the most cost efficient is the decision that will eventually be made.
Probably.
So what's next?
All right. Well, it seems like Disney's getting into a little bit of a rut here with their promotions. We are getting yet again, for the third year in a row, a 24-hour Magic Kingdom party, this time geared towards the Disney, show your Disney side promotion from this year. It's called the Rock Your Disney Side.
Rock Your Disney Side. Oh, that's hip. That's hip. That's what the kids say.
In 2012, we had the One More Disney Day event during the Leap Day.
Right.
And then last year, we had the Monstrous, for the Monsters, Inc., the Monsters University, movies event in 2013. Again, this is going to be in May. It's from May 23 to May 24th. So the Magic Kingdom will be open from 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. You will have Twitter and Facebook will explode with people at 3 o'clock in the morning barely hanging on and riding, a TTA or whatever.
Sure.
They're also, of course, doing it at Disneyland at the same time.
Now, usually, Mike, when we talk about marketing strategies by and ploys by Disney, Dave turns into a snarky... well, let me say this. I'm not going to do that. I actually really, really enjoy this promotion. I don't care what they call it. I don't care what they flail around with, if it's this year's movie that they want to call it or what have you. It doesn't cost anybody anything. It's something really for the hardcores. It's extended park hours for a long time. You can give yourself for a full day. You can book yourself a trip to go there for a week and get a day where you almost have an extra day. And it's hard for me to not appreciate that. It's like I said, it's not a hard ticket event. Doesn't cost you an extra $65. It doesn't exclude anybody. Anyone who wants to go can go. So it's not like we only have 200 of these to give away kind of thing. It's come one, come all, and I'm all for those kind of things.
I don't have a problem with it at all. It is a little bit. I mean, they're obviously when I'm seeing they're getting into a rut. This is obviously going to be their thing for the foreseeable future.
Yes.
I'm sure in 2015 in May you will get the whatever they're going to try to promote. I'm assuming it'll always be in the Magic Kingdom because that has the most attractions that doesn't have alcohol so that you can worry about that.
Yeah, well, good point.
Because if they did it in Epcot, everybody from
like, you can't have that. You have to shut the bars at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. So, it's going to be the same. At some point in time, it's going to run its course and people will be like, they're doing it again. But maybe not. Maybe this will always be a thing for the locals to really get behind and enjoy. And I don't know. But, it's fine by me. What you said is true. It doesn't cost a thing. It costs them something, but it doesn't cost you. It's not a hard ticket event.
Exactly.
It's not. Yeah, it's for anybody can go, not just, DVC members or whatever. Yeah.
And it delivers. They say what they're going to do, and they deliver it. Unlike something like Limited Time Magic, where they say you're going to have something magical, and instead you get a dance party, that doesn't appeal to anyone. this actually delivers. They say they're going to do this and they do it. So I like this. I like this event. And I would be happy if they did it multiple times a year. If people thought it was popular enough to do that, I would have no problem with that. So,
yeah, they certainly get a big crowd for it.
I'm saying. It's perfect. Yep. Everybody wins.
I don't know how much money they could possibly make for it, though, because I imagine most of the people there are AP holders, locals.
Yeah, probably, but there might be that, but they get some good TV time out of it consistently.
Yeah, I suppose.
That helps.
Right. I mean, it can't cost them that much. What's the promo? It's just
just a few.
They don't
hours.
Even have all the attractions open. They just have
Yeah. So what's next?
All right, well, let's skip around from the Magic Kingdom and let's go to our favorite park, Disney's Hollywood Studios. Am I being too snarky? I apologize. Star Wars Weekends is coming. And, you know, a few weeks ago they announced that the dates for 2014, and they've added a fifth week. So much like they've added an extra week to the Food and Wine Festival at Epcot, they've added a fifth week, and no surprise, I don't think, to anybody, to Star Wars Weekends, just because they're so popular. The real shocker here, I think, came from the fact that they decided they're not bringing back the Hyperspace Hoopla, which was so popular in previous incarnations. For those who don't know, they would get out Star Wars characters who would then dance to, you know, current songs.
Painful.
If they did it this year, you would probably see like What Does the Fox Say and Blurred Lines and things like that. They're replacing that with a fireworks show that they used last year on the May the 4th event during Limited Time Magic, one of the few well-received Limited Time Magics. And apparently the Star Wars fireworks, which is fireworks set to various Star Wars music, very well-received. That is going to be the night-capping event instead of Hyperspace Hoopla.
Excellent. Great decision.
Well, you do. I mean, the Hyperspace Hoopla was very, very popular. What is your...
It was painful to look at, Mike.
It was kind of... You didn't think it was funny?
It was ridiculous. It was funny for the first 7 minutes. Then it... Think about this for a minute. Do you really think I'm going to go stand there and watch that for a half an hour?
I would.
Come on!
I would. I watched it every year. I watched it online. I enjoyed it. I'm not sure why they're getting rid of it. I really don't know why they're getting rid of it, because it was quite popular.
Because...
And it seems to me, I mean, in this cost-cutting age, I would imagine a fireworks show would cost more. I mean, a good fireworks show like this one would cost more than doing the Hoopla. I'm surprised they're doing it. I'm not sure. Now that Disney owns Star Wars, I mean, are they less inclined to sort of mock Star Wars? I don't know.
Huh?
That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah.
But uh-huh. Anyway, that's the Star Wars.
Well, we'll reserve judgment until when we see the reviews and the fireworks.
Yes. But again, what I've heard is basically identical to the one they did last on May the 4th, the Limited Time Magic event. And that was very, very well received. There's no question about that.
Cool. How many more we got to go?
We've got three more, and they're doozies.
Go ahead, go for it. I like doozies.
Back to the Magic Kingdom, the hub, famous hub that that all the lands, you know, come off of, right in front of Cinderella's castle, is going under a major, major overhaul here. They are adding almost another loop around the hub and almost doubling the walking space here for people, mostly for fireworks viewing,
right.
So that people can stand around Cinderella's castle, or in front of Cinderella's castle, and watch the very popular wishes. They're also adding two more paths that come off the hub, one that goes near or between Casey's and the Crystal Palace, and another one that will go to the under construction bypass that will allow you to exit the park without actually walking down Main Street. They sometimes open that up during the very, very crowded times of the year, but apparently that's going to be a permanent fixture. There's essentially more space for people to look at the parades and the fireworks. There's also, and there's a lot less trees. They're taking down most of the trees that are in there to block the view, so it's much more open. And they're also adding, if you see, there's some animation that Disney released of what it's going to look like when it's all said and done. They're actually adding some turrets that look like Cinderella's castle. They're not actually attached to Cinderella's castle. Instead, they're on the hub that'll be used. I'm not exactly sure for what, but they look like almost like little mini castles right in front of Cinderella's castle.
Yeah, I've seen some of this. I'm surprised. I'm surprised at what they're doing.
Why are you surprised?
I just am. I just thought it was a sacred cow, so to speak.
The hub?
Yeah. I just thought that the layout inside of, of that kind of thing was something they certainly wouldn't touch, and that there really wasn't any need for it. And I don't know if there is. I'm not judging whether or not this is a good or bad decision. I'm just surprised.
And one of the major things they're doing is they're getting rid of the bridge that actually goes, I think maybe the biggest thing is it's no longer going to be a complete moat around the hub.
Right.
I mean, they're filling it in, essentially. They've drained it, and they're filling it in to add, again, more, you know, walking space, more viewing space. And they've also added quite a bit to Casey's outdoor. They've recently reopened Casey's Corner's outdoor seating, and they've essentially doubled the size of that. There's a lot more seating there, which is, I mean, for people who would want to eat a hot dog, they are, you know, there's much more room there. They've always needed that.
Yeah, I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just surprised that it's something that they felt they needed to invest in and to address. It's,
I think it makes sense. To me, it makes sense. I mean, I know some people are, like you said, maybe not completely thrilled with, redoing the hub and changing it, making it more wide open, adding all that space to it. But I think it makes sense.
It might. It's one of those things that I got to see. I got to go there and walk it when it's done, to see whether or not I think it. But yeah, it might. Okay. What's next?
Two more stories. Yep. Last, this one is, of course, the refillable mugs have actually started to change. They finally, after...
They're free now?
It seems like about 40 years, and it's been the same design, and they've actually changed the design. It now looks like, you know, the Fab Five are checking into a hotel, although it's nondescript.
Very nice.
Clarabelle is behind the desk checking in. You know, it's, again, run-of-the-mill... I don't really care kind of design. It really makes no difference to me. It's not obviously not resort specific that we all want and we're never going to get. It's just, you know, whatever, you know, doesn't really change much. And to be honest with all, you know, I would have thought there would be a lot more hoopla surrounding this. Nobody seems to care.
Well, because the hoopla used to be because of the fact that the ones that you've been hanging on to for the last couple of years no longer work. Now they don't anyway, so it doesn't really matter what they look like. In the long run, nobody really cared what they looked like. They only cared that it was still the one they had.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Fair enough.
And what's the last one?
The last one came out of left field a couple of weeks ago, and you know it's been out there now for a few weeks. Starting on February 23rd, 2014, Disney... the day before they actually increased the prices, announced they were increasing the prices. They did this on a Saturday evening while Universal Studios was having a big press event. They announced that they were increasing all the single-day park tickets up by $4, which now, of course, puts the Magic Kingdom at the magic number of $99. Not quite the three digits that we are expecting to come soon. It is... a price increase that occurred only 8 months after the last one, which, of course, was the first time they actually differentiated between the Magic Kingdom and the other parks. The other parks are going up from they're up to $94 now. They've gone to $90 to $94. They've also increased pretty much all across the board the various tickets. You know, annual passes have gone up a little bit too. So, I mean, go to any website that you want to see what the new price structure is for the different days and park hoppers and all that kind of stuff. But they have snuck in a new price increase.
How nice of them.
I thought it was bizarre. I mean, I think we've talked about this in the past on another thing. What's the phrase when the press or the White House releases information?
Taking out like the garbage. Putting it out with the garbage.
Yeah, they absolutely put it out with the garbage on this one.
Well, they always do that. They always do that with price increases.
Yeah. And of course, they did some sort of press release that, you know, we continue to provide magic unlike any place else and blah, blah, blah. Right. But now we are on the cusp of a $100 a day ticket.
You know, as opposed to my rant with regards to the vacation club situation from a couple of weeks ago, this is how I feel about price increases. As long as people pay it, there's really not much we can expect other than price increases. I mean, it's going to go up until people stop going. And then they're going to have to come up with a way to do some sort of discount plan. You know, they're never coming down. You know?
No.
It's never coming down. It's possible that the psychological impact of the $100+ thing may hold it at 99 for, you know, maybe a cycle longer than we're used to. Perhaps they jumped it up to 99 before they really wanted to. Maybe they wanted to do that in the summer or at the, you know, at the end of the year, that kind of thing. That's possible. But as long as people keep flocking to Disney at $99, they know there's no difference between 99 and 102 or 103 or 110.
Well, you know? I mean, clearly the reason they, first of all, the reason they increased it by only $4 was to make sure it didn't go up to 100.
Right.
That's number one.
Right.
And number two is clearly the last time that they raised prices and differentiated between the Magic Kingdom and the other parks was for the simple fact that they, when they do raise it again the next time and Magic Kingdom goes over $100, they can still say three of their four parks are less than $100.
Right, right. But sooner or later, they won't be.
Sooner or later, they won't be. Sooner or later, they won't be. But, you know, the ticket, the price of tickets has risen quicker than, you know, you hear Disney talk about inflation, all that kind of stuff. Ticket prices to Disney have gone up faster, a lot faster than inflation.
Of course. As has the price of accommodations and no, and food.
No, not food, though. That's the thing, though. Not food.
No, maybe not food. Maybe not restaurants. But certainly park tickets have massively increased over the past. Oh, well, I mean, I'm 40 years old. And in the time I've been paying for it myself, we have gone from a almost affordable place to a completely unaffordable place. Right. You know, at least for the 1 day ticket.
They don't want people buying 1 day tickets. I mean, that's the whole point of this is they want to offer. They don't want people going to Universal.
Right.
Who, by the way, increased their price of tickets to $94 too.
Sure,
the very
of course.
Next day.
That's never going to change. They're always going to be doing
they
that.
They do that, though. I mean, in reality, why would you do that? If you're a Universal.
Because people keep coming.
Yeah, I know. But their whole thing is to differentiate themselves from Disney and to offer an alternative to Disney. Why wouldn't they stay at 90 to say, hey, you know, we're cheaper than Disney?
Well, that I don't know. But what I do know is that we're moving towards a reality of as the world gets smaller and, you know, that people and transportation gets easier and all these things that Disney doesn't necessarily want tens of thousands of people in their doors. They want perhaps a slightly less than that, paying much more than than before. You know, it's sort of like the whole argument of sporting events, right? You and I used to go to ball games back in the early 90s and pay $9 a ticket for a Major League Baseball game. Now you can't get in the door for less than $70 a ticket. And that's because that's exactly who they want. They would rather have 40,000 people paying $70 a ticket than 60,000 people paying $12 a ticket because in the long run, they make more money.
So, clearly they are going sooner or later. They're going to price out
certain groups of people. Yep.
Yeah. Maybe the lower middle class and below.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If not, if they haven't done that already.
Right.
Certainly because people in that price range probably can't go every year.
Certainly. And those are the people who would come down to Disney, stay off site, probably could only afford to buy, you know, back in the day, they'd buy maybe, you know, a 2 day pass or something like that. Because it only costs maybe $100. So they're spending $400 or $500 for kids, you know, maybe 1 day here, they go to the beach for a day. They don't want those people anymore. They don't want them coming in from the Days Inn over on iDrive. That those people are no longer a target of any kind to Disney. And they're more and more trying to increase prices on local, you know, Florida resident APs and the vacation clubbers and stuff. I mean, they're doing it all across the board. So like you said, they are, while everybody sits and looks at the money invested, into, Universal and saying, well, is Disney really keeping up? Folks, Disney's keeping up. They're just not doing it with big shiny objects in the park. They're doing it by other ways to make their money and to maximize their dollars and things to that effect. And they're taking advantage of that situation. Mm-hmm. You know, they're taking advantage of the fact that Universal is bringing a lot of people to Orlando. And you know, that's what they're there for. So you can't complain. Anyway, Enough of my economics for the day. We are going to take one more short break and come back with our feature, a look at touring the Animal Kingdom in the rain. Coming back on Radio Harambe in just a second. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jumbo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to jumboeveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Welcome back to Radio Harambe. Dave McBride joined by Safari Mike. And Mike, a few weeks ago, we did a listener question show. And one of the questions was for us to talk about what to do during the rain at the Animal Kingdom. Because a lot of people think there's not a lot of indoor things here. There's not a lot of dark rides and restaurants and bars to hide in. Not a lot of shops. You know, so what do? We're stuck out here in the rain. And so we thought we'd address this. It's been a couple of weeks or a little while since we got this question, but we always intended on giving it its sort of a full due here. And I'm going to start you off, Mike, by kind of serving this ball across to you by saying that I do believe that you are one who wakes up in the morning, sees it raining, and rubs your hands together and says, it's time for the Animal Kingdom.
Well, we are getting towards spring shower, so I think it's probably apropos that we talk about this now.
Correct.
Although maybe hurricane season would be better too, but either way. Let me talk about a little bit about Buzzkill Bob. I don't know if, Dave, if you remember Buzzkill Bob.
Well, I never met Buzzkill Bob, but I certainly heard all about him.
I don't remember if we ever talked about him on the podcast.
I don't know if you have.
I don't remember. So let's tell you a little story about Buzzkill Bob. I was staying with my family at the Boardwalk Inn, the villas there at the Boardwalk, and we were in the midst of a hurricane, although it was sort of, Florida was getting the tail, you know, just sort of the peripheral of the hurricane. Not really windy, just really, really raining. We had one day where it was pouring rain. And we went down to pick up a bus to go to the Animal Kingdom. We had reservations at Yak and Yeti for lunch, which I love. And down strolls Buzzkill Bob with a clipboard in hand to talk to the people who were going to the park. And he was talking to the various people. And he was essentially, he was an employee, obviously, of Disney, steering them towards essentially Magic Kingdom and kind of Epcot, too. He came over to us and said, essentially, you know, where are you going? And I said, well, we're going to Animal Kingdom, or, you know, that's where we're planning on going. And he tried to talk us out of it, saying, oh, well, you know, it's, you know, not a lot's going to be open. It's, you know, it's going to be very rainy. There's not a lot inside to do. You might be better off going to the Magic Kingdom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, we listened to Buzzkill Bob, let him have his talk. And then we talked to amongst ourselves and basically said, you know, we have reservations for Yak and Yeti. Worst case scenario, we walk around in the rain, we look at some animals, we have lunch, and we go somewhere else. So let's just go. And Buzzkill Bob was actually, he almost was kind of perturbed that we had decided not to listen to his sage advice and went against his recommendations. But anyway.
It's right there on the clipboard.
Right there on the clipboard. But we got on the bus all by our lonesome to Animal Kingdom, and I think maybe some other people who were listening to him, as well as perhaps some other buzzkill folk throughout the resorts. The Animal Kingdom was a ghost town. There was nobody there. and it turned out to probably be one of the better days we've had at any park anywhere. It was so much fun.
Okay, go ahead. Explain why.
Okay, sure.
Because here's where we're going to get into what people wouldn't expect. Because if you think about it, you know, it's outdoors. It's practically a hurricane. There's no way Kilimanjaro Safaris is going to be open. All the animals are going to be inside. Even on the in the Maharaja Jungle Trek, all the animals are going to be inside. We can't possibly go on outdoor things like Expedition Everest, and other than that, what else is there to do?
Right.
So,
well, the first thing we did was go to the Maharaja Jungle Trek, just assuming that things were not going to be open. So we didn't so we were just going to walk around was what we were going to do. So we went over to the Maharaja Jungle Trek, and they hadn't even opened it yet. They were about to get open. And we were talking to some of the cast members who are just sort of at the front there, you know, that little hut before you walk in. And I said to the guy, is everything going to be open? They were having a little bit of problem with Everest. It wasn't open yet, but he said everything will be open. I mean, as long as there's not lightning in the area, the hurricane's so bad the trees are falling down. You know,
right.
Everything's going to be open. Kali, Kilimanjaro Safaris, Everest, everything.
The complete opposite of what Buzzkill Bob's clipboard had to say.
The complete opposite. And we walked through the Maharaja Jungle Trek, and it was fantastic. Animals are very active in the rain, and I don't mean, you know, drizzling rain. I mean pouring rain. They are much more active than they would ordinarily be during a hot August day, and this was August. The tigers were running around, you know, the bats were a lot of fun. Everything was great for the Maharaja Jungle Trek. And to top it all off, we were by ourselves. I mean, literally by ourselves. It was just us and the cast members who are there at each and every exhibit to talk to you. So we had terrific conversations with those particular cast members, just talking about, you know, the animals, and, you know, we learned all sorts of things. And, you know, the guy at the over by the Batang and those areas were showing us, you know, some of the good murals there. But he also pointed out, you know, that, you know, the antlers that are on the ground were actually real antlers from last year's deer from the park, you know, in that area. They would lose their antlers and the keepers would just leave them in there to sort of add to the ambiance. You know, stuff like that you learn because, you know, they have nobody else to talk to. You're the only ones there, and you might be the only ones there for a little while. So the Maharaja Jungle Trek Pangani is fantastic too. It's also, the good thing about Pangani is a fair portion of it is actually undercover. The gorillas are undercover. There's a lot more foliage there than there is actually over in Maharaja. So you get a little bit more protection over by the Okapi. And you also have the indoor building where you can see the naked mole rats and all that kind of stuff. So that's a great spot to go to during the rain. And I have said this quite a few times on the topic of animals. If you are at the Animal Kingdom and it starts to pour, jump on Kilimanjaro Safaris. It's going to be your best ride, I guarantee it. I'm telling you right now, it's going to be the best ride you had. I've had plenty of people who have, you know, tweeted me back to me after I've told them that to say, you know, you are 1,000% right. The lions were up and around. I mean, and they're never up and around. But when it's pouring rain, they will move around, and you'll see, you know, the rhinos will be great and everything else will just be out and about and moving around. There won't be too much sitting around. Animals tend to get up and move.
Take a shower.
Yeah, exactly. You want me to keep on going?
I think that one particular one, I think the animals thing, before we move on beyond the animals, and I'm kind of incorporating all of the animal exhibits plus the Kilimanjaro Safaris. I think that it's important here to keep in mind that if you're touring in the hot months and you look at your, you know, and you're like us and you're not afraid of throwing on a poncho or a raincoat or what have you and touring, you're going whether it's raining or not. You see a day where it's going to be raining. That might be the only time, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, that might be the only time during hot months where you're going to really see anything approaching that. Because a lot of times during the summertime, the animals are just asleep, just keeping cool.
Yeah, I mean, especially during the hot months, like you said, the only time you're really going to see the animals move a lot, especially the big cats like the tigers and the lions and the cheetahs, is either be the first one to, you know, walk through the exhibit, or the first one to get on Kilimanjaro Safaris, or the last one. If you want to go there at the very end of the day, you know, I know, like, right before they put the gorillas away, they put on quite a show, that kind of thing. So either at the very beginning or at the very end, you might see something, you know, see a lot of movement, a lot of action, or when it rains.
Yeah, so it's a great tip to keep in mind.
And there's a lot of good spots, too. I mean, you would think that you'd be out in the open a lot during, you know, when it's pouring rain and stuff like that to see the animals. But there are plenty of spots to go where you have some coverage. The bats, for example, the gorillas, there are spots where you can get under, you know, overhangs to see them.
Right.
Even around the Tree of Life, there's some spots where the otters are, where the kangaroos are. There are spots where you can go where you're getting some type of coverage. So if it is pouring rain and you're just uncomfortable standing there in the pouring rain, you can find spots. The Oasis has a lot of foliage, you know, that kind of breaks it up. Some of the ones that are not so much, maybe the gibbons over in the Asia section, you know, you're kind of out in the open there. You might get pelted with rain.
Sure.
You know, but other than that, I mean, of course, the safari, the trucks are covered. So if you're on the edge of the, you know, on the side of the truck, you might get wet. But generally speaking, you're all right.
Yep, I would agree. So let's move along here from other tips, other benefits.
Other good things to do, and this is obvious, are shows.
Right.
You know, the It's Tough to Be a Bug is undercover. Finding Nemo was obviously undercover. Festival of the Lion King was, of course, undercover and will be again, obviously. Even Flights of Wonder is undercover, although the bird section, you know, the stage is not so much. So those are great spots to sit and get out of, like, if there's going to be a pouring rain for a half hour or so, that's a good place to go. The only problem with those particular places is, generally speaking, the queues are not undercover.
Right.
Finding Nemo, but fortunately, I mean, Finding Nemo, for example, unless it's really crowded, and if it's pouring rain, it's probably not going to be, is usually you could just wait till they open up and just walk in and find a seat so you don't have to stand out in the rain. Same thing with Flights of Wonder. Same thing with It's Tough to Be a Bug. You might have to – you get to wait underneath the tree there so that, you know, you're undercover there. The only flaw in this one is Festival of the Lion King. When it was over in Camp Minnie Mickey, you were out pretty much in the open standing there waiting, which can be kind of uncomfortable in the pouring rain.
Sure.
I don't know what it's going to be like when they open it up at Harambe, though.
We will see, yep.
So that's hard to tell. You know, like we were talking about, it's dead. You can pretty much do whatever you want, get on whatever you want, when you want. You don't have to worry about lining up for the FastPass Plus machine, which apparently might be a half-hour wait. You don't have to worry about long waits at Kilimanjaro Safaris or Primeval World or anything like that. Dinosaur is another good one because that's completely undercover.
Well, and that's what I was going to say about the shows, was that if you are there and you are determining that it is in fact dead, then you could show up for the shows 2 minutes before it starts.
Absolutely.
And you're just going to walk in. So you don't have to worry about queuing up really for those.
Right. The only one that wasn't quite like that was Festival of the Lion King, because they tend not to open it up until almost showtime. Finding Nemo, you get to walk in a little bit earlier. I'm not sure if that is a function of them having to clear all that stuff out of the way and they don't open it up to people until about, you know, 10 minutes beforehand. So, you know, unless you show up right when it's about to start or a couple of minutes before that, you might be standing out there. Finding Nemo, they tend to allow you into the theater a little bit earlier than they used to at Festival of the Lion King. You know, and like I was just saying, Dinosaur is a great ride to go on during the rain because, you know, it's all indoors. It's all covered. And, you know, the detraction of the Animal Kingdom that you hear so much, you know, it's Animal Kingdom hot, and that, you know, there's so much foliage that, you know, that presses the heat in and it gets very humid there. And all that very well may be true. but that also helps you when it's raining because there's a lot more coverage than at Epcot where you're out in the open one exhibit to the next.
Just getting pelted. Yep.
Yeah, just getting pelted. If it's pouring rain, I mean, you're going to have to run out into the no coverage at all.
Right.
At Epcot or even the Magic Kingdom or Hollywood Studios.
Right.
Another good ride in the rain is, oddly enough, Collie River Rapids. And here's why. For the most part, the queue is undercover. I mean, only when it's really crowded is it not. And it's not right. going to be when it's pouring rain.
Exactly.
So you'll be able to, you know, basically be undercover if there's any wait at all. And also, I mean, the whole thing about Collie River Rapids is that you get soaking wet. Who cares when it's pouring rain?
Exactly.
Who cares?
Exactly.
Just have a good time.
Yeah. I agree 100% on that one.
Another good thing that I thought of for the rain is exploring some things that you might not ordinarily explore. And what I mean by that is, when you're in the other parks and it starts the pouring rain, people tend to just jump in the store that's closest to them or the restaurant that's closest to them and maybe spend more time than they ordinarily would. Animal Kingdom has this few spots that is really good for that. Restaurantosaurus, for example, is a great spot if you want to just chill out for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Enjoy the ambiance of the place. Have one of those, if you're an adult, have an adult beverage there. If not, whatever. Have whatever you want. Chester and Hester's store is another great one to just sort of camp out and, explore it. Explore some of the decor there, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Another one I thought of was actually Rafiki's Planet Watch is a good spot to just go and hang out for 45 minutes. The problem with that, of course, is you have the train is covered, but there's the walk from the train to Rafiki's that is not covered.
It's not covered, but it's essentially under tree cover.
It is under good tree coverage, so you're in pretty good shape. The petting zoo, not so much. I'm not sure if you'd want to pet a soaking wet goat.
No.
So I might skip that.
Yeah.
But Rafiki's is a good spot. Do the rainforest thing, hang out there. Maybe you'll get somebody, some action in the veterinarian area. Sure. Watch those little movies that they have. Do a character meet and greet that they have, wait for Rafiki to come out. They're always bringing out animals to show people like snakes and tortoises and things like that. So that's another great spot to sort of just go inside and hang out for a while.
Mike, we're talking about all the positives. And I don't want to be completely unfair and not mention the negatives. And the one negative that comes to my mind.
I have a couple of them, so go ahead.
The first one that comes to my mind when it comes to the Animal Kingdom is that really to me, dining-wise, the Animal Kingdom is perhaps the best counter service. Snack carts and those kind of things are some of the best anywhere in Walt Disney World. And that's a problem in the pouring rain.
That is a problem, and it's even compounded more currently with Harambe the way it is, because one of my personal favorites, and we've talked about this before, is the Tamu Tamu. I love that little restaurant. I like Kusafiri for coffee and, the African spice cake and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, there is no covered seating at Harambe.
Right.
The only thing that they have open is that seating behind the restaurant, the Tamu Tamu itself, which is not covered. The old area by the Dawa bar that was covered is gone currently. I'm not sure if there's going there once all this is said and done, whether there'll be areas for you to, find some cover in the rain, but you can't now. So Kusafiri, Tamu Tamu, those are kind of bad spots in the rain. Flame Tree Barbecue is not a great spot. There are pagodas where you get coverage, but you do have to walk to the pagodas. You're not completely undercover the whole time. I don't know if you want your French fries getting soaking wet as you're, racing towards the pagoda. But, there is Restaurantosaurus. There is Pizzafari, although the pizza's terrible. There are a couple of spots where you can go. The other problem with the food and also the Yak and Yeti counter service is out in the open too, which is not really covered. There are some spots there where it's kind of covered, but most of the seating there is not. The restaurants themselves, Yak and Yeti, for example, and even more so, I think, at the Rainforest Cafe up front, they're freezing cold in there. You go in there wet from Holly River Rapids even, but from the pouring rain, you go in there, you're freezing your tuchus off. It gets very cold in those places. I've never been in Tusker House where I've been soaking wet, but I can only imagine it's probably pretty well cooled down too. So eating does present its challenges.
Yeah, and like I said, there's so many great snack carts. You check those kind of, a lot of times they're closed. And, you know, and it kind of renders them a little useless. That's an issue.
Yeah, I mean, it is. So, you know, what I would recommend if I was eating there, I would, my personal choice would be to go to Tamu Tamu.
Sure.
Not Tamu Tamu, excuse me, Restaurantosaurus. Eat in Restaurantosaurus. Either enjoy the ambiance inside, but if it's cold, they have a covered porch. Sit out there and, you know, watch the rain. That's fine. You'll be dry. Eat, you know, relax. Have one of those rum lemonades that are really good. You know, that kind of stuff. So that would be my personal recommendation for eating during a rainstorm.
Yeah, I would agree.
I have one more kind of, well, I guess we've already covered sort of waiting outside. There are a couple of spots where you have to wait outside where there's not a covered queue. Character meet and greets, for example, not always a covered queue. I mean, if there's too many people at Russell and Doug, you might be out in the rain, although they are generally under a cover. But most places have, to some degree, a covered queue. Everest, Primeval World, Dinosaur, obviously, most of them are covered, except for the shows like Festival of the Lion King, and I don't know what it's going to be like when it reopens. That leads me to Expedition Everest and Primeval World. Now, those are fun rides, and I very much enjoy them. They are will likely be not crowded, and you could probably walk on them. However, especially Everest, they go super fast outside. And if you've ever been in the rain on a roller coaster, it can sting. I mean, the rain coming down as you're zipping through it can actually sting your face if it's raining badly. And you can really, I mean, at parts of Everest, you go super fast. It's not as bad on Primeval World, but that's something to consider. I mean, it might not be the most comfortable experience doing Expedition Everest and, to a lesser extent, Primeval World in a pouring rainstorm.
Yeah, I wouldn't say Primeval World because that doesn't go fast enough, I think. Everest, I see your point. I think you definitely would try it. I mean,
well,
if it's open.
There's going to be no, and it's going to be open, like I said, unless it's lightning. And as people who've been there during hurricane seasons or in the summer and stuff, you know that those kinds of rides, when there's lightning in the area, actually close.
Sure.
You know, anything that's outdoors and goes up a little bit high, even anything outdoors pretty much closes during a lightning storm.
Correct.
So Everest is no exception to that. And I believe Primeval World is no exception to that either, or Triceratops Spin. I believe Kilimanjaro Safaris will still go forward in the lightning. I believe. I've never tried it, though.
No, neither have I. I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know it either. I know Dinosaur obviously will, you know, in the shows and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that pretty much is my tips for what to do and what not to do in the rain.
Cool. Mike, what I would say is this. A lot of people think that if it's raining, let's take advantage of the lack of crowds and go to the most crowded park. And I understand that sentiment. And there's something to say about that. So absolutely, if you're in a really busy time and it's going to be crazy rain and you're willing to do it, it may be the time to go to the Magic Kingdom.
Right.
But the point we're trying to make is that if you are in one of those very busy times, especially in the heat of the summer, which is just around the corner and a lot of people travel then, you're going to get a lot of kind of you're going to want to do that. Go to the Magic Kingdom in those. But if you go to the Animal Kingdom, the point is you're going to probably get the best time you possibly can. You're going to maximize your time at the Animal Kingdom because what we talked about with the animals, you're going to get a benefit on that day that you're not going to get. The only thing you're going to get at the Magic Kingdom is you're going to get better lines, but there's nothing that you're going to see or going to experience is going to be, you know, at all better than if it were not raining. But Animal Kingdom, you are going to get a better experience with the animals.
Right. I mean, I think some things at the Magic Kingdom would probably be not as good. I mean, you're not going to want to ride. You're not going to want to do the Tomorrowland Speedway in the rain. Not that you would ever want to do the Tomorrowland Speedway anyway. But, I mean, Big Thunder Mountain's not going to be the best in the rain. You know, that kind of stuff. The spinny rides, Dumbo, that kind of stuff. You know, there's going to be a lot there that you're not going to want to do in the rain. Epcot. You know, there's big spaces between the attractions in Future World anyway.
Yeah.
And even at World Showcase, I mean, you have to go out uncovered for, you know, a decent amount of walking in those areas. So those are not – you're not going to stay the driest at those parks.
I agree with you entirely. So I guess that's it, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I think the to make a long story short, you'll have great animal experiences, a great Kilimanjaro safaris. You'll have no crowds, great shows. You know, the food, you know, eating might be uncomfortable because you'll be wet or freezing cold and wet.
But there's enough options where it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yes, exactly.
And don't listen to Buzzkill Bob.
And yes, that's the moral of the story. Don't ever listen to Buzzkill Bob.
Well, thanks once again for listening to Radio Harambe. I would like to invite you to visit JohnBoEveryone.com, our website. Like Disney's Animal Kingdom, we're undergoing a lot of significant changes over there, but you can still find some great attractions, reviews of attractions, I'm sorry, restaurants and shows, tons of photo galleries, all the stuff you need to know about touring the Animal Kingdom, plus a little conservation stuff as well. Never want to go through a show without plugging our Not a Half Day Park t-shirts, which you can find at Zazzle.com/JohnBoEveryone. Every bit of money we make off the sale of those shirts goes towards our conservation partners. To learn more about them, go to JohnBoEveryone.com. Click on conservation. You can find us on Twitter. Don't forget to go to Mike's Twitter account at JohnBoEveryone and participate and get your entry in for this week's Wasalu, aka Buradika CD yes. giveaway.
And let me remind people that when I put out a question, do not respond to me on Twitter.
Yes, please.
Response. DM me.
Right.
I say it in the tweets, but I will not accept, you know, people just tweeting back at me. DM me.
Which means direct message, folks.
Well, if you're on Twitter, you know what a DM is.
Some of us are on Twitter, but don't know what any of it means. You can find me. I'm also on Twitter occasionally at Radio Harambe. You can certainly contact me there. I don't tweet a lot. I basically only use the account to tweet things that are specifically show related. But if you are, you have a question for me or you want to get in touch, certainly you can do so there. We are also on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Mike's doing some stuff on Pinterest, all sorts of things. Go to those links at JohnBoEveryone.com. We ask you to subscribe to the show. Rate us, leave a review as well. Really does help to get the word out. Mike, is there anything I'm missing?
I don't think so.
All right. So for Safari Mike, I'm Dave McBride. Kwaharini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Now,